At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Today on The Grave Talks, Order of Exorcism Part 2, as we continue our conversation with Timothy Earle. Timothy Earle is an employee of the Advent International Order of Exorcists, reports directly to Archbishop James Cloud, the chief exorcist. His adventure began back in 1997 when he began collecting EVPs with no ill intent. Nevertheless, things moved fast into a very different direction after his wife was subjected to a demonic assault. His life has been profiled in a number of documentaries and television series since. Today we learn what it takes to be an exorcist and what his life is like going down that path on The Grave Talks.
You know, there's a lot of depression associated with
You'd almost have to be in that state, I would think, to, you know, you could be that worn down, which so many of us get that way just with life, that I would assume that someone who is already suffering from depression, from in mental illness as well, are those people bigger targets for something to come in and possess someone? Does someone have to ask? Does someone have to do something to invite something like this in to attach to themselves? Or does it just kind of sneak in when you'd least expect it?
Oh, it can sneak in when you least expect it. I had a case where I, good Protestant family, city far away, not too far away from me, active in the church, goes to the church. Husband was a youth minister. I mean, the very stereotypical Bible Belt family.
Sure.
And they were also prominent. He was a president at the local bank. She was a socialite. You know, I think if they probably married into money or, had money the old-fashioned way, but I'm not certain. Anyway, they started having ended up being demonic activity in their home, and they were being attacked. We never got to the root of why. Sometimes you just don't get a why. Mm-hmm. And you just have to, be ready to live with that. But the thing that she shared with me after it was all said and done, she sent me a letter, and she said that the realization that this was even real immediately outcast her from the rest of society. That is, she could remember, she shared that she was sitting at a busy traffic intersection at a red light, and she's looking around, and she is not part of what's happening right there at that moment, because now she has a knowledge of what everybody has dismissed, and this knowledge of this old life, the spiritual life and the dangers thereof, just separates her from even being able to socialize.
Mm-hmm.
So her into PTSD, she had to go to professional counseling, and my understanding is she's still doing it today. because, you know, her whole belief system's upended.
Yeah.
So it's a life shocker. I remember that. I'll show this one story with you real quick. You know, people reach out to me all the time. Hey, I want to get involved, or hey, can you take me ghost hunting? I even took a TV show ghost hunting a couple of times, actually. There's a social worker reached out, and one of her children, I actually think it was a young adult, but with Down syndrome, was really into ghost hunting, wanted to go ghost hunting, was asking me to take them ghost hunting. And I just simply responded, okay, great. What happens if we actually see a ghost? How's your young man going to react?
Yeah.
And she spiced back, never mind. So, you know, you got to think it through. Everybody wants to see a ghost until they actually see a ghost and have that experience.
It's not like riding Splash Mountain. It's a serious thing where there could be real effects, real outcomes to doing it.
Yeah, there is, and especially for somebody doing what I do. We get attacked all the time when I have something coming. A case coming, even before I know it, we'll start having paranormal activity. I walk into the living room, the chandelier swinging, you know, we start seeing shadow people. I'll know that I'll be getting a phone call shortly. So those are actually topical. That type of activity is really easy for me to interact with, because, you know, they're not really affecting me. They're just, I'm been there, done that, you know.
Is it trying to taunt you when it's doing things like that? Like, yeah, you think you're going to go help? Look, what we're already here. We're already doing this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of it is feeling me out, seeing what I am, what I'm capable of.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's trying to scare me off before I can do it. But it's... hasn't worked in the past, and maybe it should have at times. I'll be honest with you. There's been a couple of cases that I shouldn't have gone on.
But, yeah.
So
let me ask you this. You had brought up earlier that you work with some psychologists, and especially when you're trying to evaluate, is this person mentally ill or is there a possession going on? How on board are some of those psychologists where they do the evaluation and they say, yeah, we don't think this person has any sort of disorder going on? Do you have ones that are like, I think possession is the answer here, considering they're coming from a world of medicine and that sort of, you know, viewpoint of science, that these things are, you know, it's some sort of malady with the brain?
So I won't get they're possessed. That no licensed doctor would ever do that. They would be, you know, right out of town.
Sure.
So I'm not going to get a possessed. Now, I've personally known some of them. I know that some of them do believe in possession.
Mm-hmm.
But what I will get is they're not mentally insane. So they'll tell me that there is a psychosis here. There is something medical here. No, this is something emotional that counseling can handle, or move them on to meds. Or I get they're completely lucid. We don't believe that they're suffering, even if they're having paranormal activities, and even if they think that they're being punched and attacked and things of that nature. An actual psychiatrist or psychologist will be able to say, well, it's not because of an illness. So once I get that, that's all I get. And I'll run with that, you know.
Sure. That must be interesting to hear from a psychologist, though, of, you know, that they are on board, not necessarily in terms of a diagnosis, but just in conversation of, yeah, I believe that sometimes there is possession going on.
Well, there's a lot of actual study that has taken place recently called spirit therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and more along the lines of MPS, multiple personality
disorder. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So even if they don't have actual possession, if you treat each individual as a spirit, so to speak, and putting that spirit to ease and treat that spirit, people end up living much more happier and productive lives. So
yeah,
Now, having said that, is that a belief? No, possibly not necessarily, but it is opening more the academia's eyes. And, you know, there's a Dennis Rader, Dr. Dennis Rader is a, I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank. I don't know what he's a doctor of. However, mm-hmm. he has been doing studies more along the lines of psychokinesis, ESP, things of that nature. But, you know, it all bleeds together. And one of the things that he said in a seminar I went to watch was there 0.03% of all of academia has ever been applied to studying the supernatural.
Sure.
I mean, it just doesn't exist. So if you look at it, I mean, you know, we've mathematical equations created, you know, told us there's the God particle, right? And they built a, you know, billion-dollar collider over there in Europe,
yeah.
just on mathematical equations. Yet people are having these experiences. We're not studying them.
How often do you think it is that people are, and I'm not saying, you know, they're having a major need for an exorcism or they're in a very low state of it, but they are simply being said, told, you know, you have this disorder, take this medicine and your brain will kind of calm down a little bit. And yes, it may help with it, but how often are people possessed or have some sort of attachment to them and they're just being treated as if this is just a mental illness?
Well, there's no real statistic on that.
No, I
know. It's all conjecture, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm just wondering what your opinion is on that.
My opinion is, I would say that maybe as high as 20%.
Wow.
There's Archbishop from Georgia that thinks it's more like 90%, right? Mm-hmm. But there's another Archbishop that thinks it's it's maybe 2-3%.
Sure.
It's all opinion. We don't have eyes or ears into that world. You know, they're not our cases or studies. But yeah, it happens. We know that it happens. And unfortunately, there's really not a lot that we're going to be able to do about it. So even if they're diagnosed with a disorder and they are directed to take medications, and we still think there are cases where we still think that they are actually dealing with possession. You know, a priest can proceed forward with diligence. I mean, being very careful with exorcism, but that patient must continue taking the meds. The priest cannot, will not tell the client to stop their medical treatment. So,
does that, and I, in no way am I ever suggesting someone stop taking their meds. I am very pro take your meds.
Yeah.
But does someone who is medicated, does that make it easier or more difficult for your, in your opinion, to treat someone spiritually for a possession? Does the medicine help keep things away, keep things down? Obviously, it should help to have them live a better life. But does it make it more difficult to exercise something out of them, or does it have any effect at all?
So I've read two cases and have two conversations on this, and it goes both ways. There's one conversation that is the patient is more malleable, right? Mm-hmm. They're more susceptible to influence. There's the other conversation that is they may be open to influence. However, that influence doesn't stick. So, in the two cases that I read, both being medicated, that was the different conclusions of the different priests. So, and then the two priests I spoke to about it had, you know, each their own opinion too. I've personally never interacted with it. I haven't. You know, I've identified somebody who I think needed to be on meds. I got the concurrence. They went on meds and they were not treated for exorcism or demonic oppression.
Okay.
Not. So, but yeah, it's a fine line.
Sure.
It's a legal line.
Yeah.
It's a terrifying line.
Yeah. And I mean, even beyond that, I mean, it's someone's life, obviously, and you had to tread very carefully as to where you go down and how that's handled. Let me ask you this, because there's a lot of, obviously, ghost hunting is common today as finding a McDonald's, it seems. There's tons of people out there doing it. Tons of people out there some with very careful and cautious ways of doing it. Some just, hey, I got this piece of equipment. Let's go see what it does. And willy-nilly trying to talk to the dead. How dangerous, I should say, is ghost hunting with various types of equipment, all the way from a Ouija board, all the way up to, you know, collecting EVPs, ghost boxes, insert device here that somehow seems to get you communication with the other side. Are all of those types of devices and tactics created equal, and you have just the same risk associated with using a Ouija board versus a ghost box or something, or are there different levels of danger depending on what one is doing?
Well, it's as far as the devices themselves, it's how you use the device. So I'm gonna go with your analogy that they're all created equal.
Okay,
but when you're ghost hunting, you're opening up yourself to interacting with whatever's on the other side, and you don't know what that thing is going to be. The more powerful the entities are, negative entities. So there's a very good chance that you're interacting with something that is negative. That's not to say that you don't interact with human spirits, and ghost hunting can be fun. I used to enjoy it a lot, but and there's fun ways to do it. And in biblical tense, it's called necromancy. You're not supposed to interact with the spirits, but if you read through it, you're not supposed to ask them for favors or get intel from them. You're actually supposed to challenge spirits. And there's passage to that. But so as far as a moral aspect of it, I don't think that it's necessarily moral. It's fun. People do it. People, especially around Halloween, everybody wants to go out and have a good scare, but they need to be able to learn. They need to know the dangers. And one of the dangers is you're going to bring something home. That's the first thing that typically happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, you can see a ghost. Yes, you can get EVPs. Yes, you can get touched or pushed or see things pushed over and things. You know, that's the fright. That's what everybody's looking for. But the first real danger is bringing something home. That's more common than not. But the spirits will typically stick around no more than 2-3 weeks, and then they leave. The next danger is, yes, you're opening yourself up, giving something permission to interact with you, but also how much permission you give that is paramount to how much interaction you're going to receive. So if you're saying, spirit, come interact with me however you want, well, that spirit could jump you. Partial possession, temporary possession is a real danger. Then, of course, if the spirit doesn't like where they're at, they can attach themselves to you, and now you've got something hanging on you for an extended period of time. So it's all in the permissions that you give, and that's the spirit board, that the Ouija board everybody's terrified of, because you're giving something permission, tacit permissions, but you're also wanting to move that penchant, right, that little heart-shaped thing, and you're giving the spirit permission to work through you. So now you're giving the spirit permission to jump you.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, a lot of people don't shut it down or know to shut it down, let alone how to. When you're talking to something and want them to talk into a recorder, it's much less likely you're going to be physically attacked or jumped, because you're not given that permission. But people still do in the ways that they talk. Okay. So it's how you approach it, I suppose.
Obviously, the level as to which you've gotten into this is very deep and very powerful and meaningful to a lot of people. And you were brought there. You were driven there in a very personal way in 1997. Can you explain a little bit more about what happened with your wife and you and that demonic attack that took place in your world?
So, yeah, and I'm going to drag this out a little bit, because I'm going to share a case with you.
Okay? Sure.
We were wanting a large family. you know, I'm in love. I said, okay, whatever. Sure.
What's 20 kids?
Yeah, exactly. Well, she had a good target of 7. We had 2, son and daughter, and we were trying to have more while she continued to have miscarriages.
Sure.
But during that time, she also started seeing an entity. Now, most would call this the Hat Man. It is a shadow person, that is a person that's blacker than black. You can't see any features, and they are not a shadow on the wall. They're like a 3D shadow standing in front of you. And this person, Chris, described as having a, you know, cape and a top hat, shorter top hat, not quite a fedora. And it would walk across the room. It would stand in the closet and stare at her. And it seemed to happen. And every time that happened, she seemed to have a miscarriage.
Okay.
So, and yes, we ended up performing. She was not possessed, but we believed that she was being attacked. And we performed a simple exorcism on the home. Multiple, actually. And ended up stopping it. Unfortunately, she did have lasting health conditions, and we didn't have any more than the 2 children.
Sure.
God, we only have 2 children, but that's just me talking. Obviously, I'm upset, right?
Yeah.
Something attacked my wife.
Yeah.
My life. And so I actually started looking into this, and yes, I came across the legend of the Hat Man, but this is not the Hat Man. This is not. I've actually ran into this demon a few times, and it seems to go up and down the I-35 corridor. And I know that sounds strange, but there is the transaction of demons jumping by infection, and it can happen. So the whatever means is traveling, is it actually goes up and down the corridor. So I've had cases down into Oklahoma, Texas, up into Kansas City, Nebraska, Missouri, up in that area. Mm-hmm. And each of these cases with this particular demon, the woman is pregnant and ends up having a miscarriage. So we, I don't think it's Balak, but I have... And I'll get there. I do have the name of it, but it's really strange. So fast forward, this one particular case is actually in Oklahoma. I'm not going to say where to protect the innocent.
Sure.
She sent me a picture, and it's a picture of this shadow entity full on standing there. Mm-hmm. Oh, I go down and, I start the investigative process. And there's multiple interviews, and it's a 2.5-3 hour drive one direction. And I'm going down sometimes twice a week to talk to this family. And one of the first things that they noticed is that every time I walked into the house, the clock stopped. All the clocks hanging on the wall stopped. And they check batteries, they actually replace the clocks, and time had even passed quite a few visits before they told me about this. It was quite the thing, so I started documenting it.
Yeah.
At a specific time, and didn't matter what type of clock, could be digital, it could be analog, could be, there's even a wound clock, mechanical, and it would stop. They would all stop when I came in. During the interview process, multiple EVPs were recorded. One of them, I mentioned Psalms 93, and then the guttural tone, I get a response saying, yeah, try that. But this family is really unique. So they live in a residential area that's rural. And this is an area where 5-acre lots were set out for single home use. And there are double wides and single wides on these properties. The gal moved in and had her home built and moved in, and then she's walking down the street and she sees her sister walking down the other way, where her sister just moved in 2 months before, and they're actually kind of close, but they never told each other, so they have both moved in. And then there, another sister, which they don't interact with very much, moves in further down the street. And the way that they're patterned is their homes are actually in a triangle, which is kind of unique. And then they actually have a brother who is, and I, if I recall correctly, he's actually from a different father, so they didn't really know him well. He was actually in the same location before any of them were, further on down, you know, the block. And so all four of them coalesced without talking to each other to purchase properties, build homes or have homes transferred there, and to live out their lives. So I got really curious about that. And one of the things that we find often with demonic activity is there's a lot of tethers. You know, there seems to be a spider web of events, and a lot of exorcists will call it layers. There's a lot of layers to it, and that you really want to go through the investigation and find all these layers to get as much intel as possible. So I started investigating the property and come to find out it, you know, this area was Indian land. Most of Oklahoma is.
Yeah.
But in the early 20th century, a conspicuous landowner, the gentleman who had at one time owned more land than anybody else in the continental U.S., he actually took possession of this land, which was only supposed to be passed down through traditional native bloodlines. But he convinced this young native that he'll be wealthy if he kills his father, takes possession of the land, and then sells it to him, and they carry this out. And it's not discovered for a few decades, but so for a few decades, he actually lived on the very spot where these four are now living. Come to find out, it's their great-great-grandfather. So his farm, and he even had a railhead. It was such a big ranch. He even had a railhead that came up. You can see traces of this old rail bed still there. He ends up getting killed by his own train, stepped out in front of it, tripped, the train ran over him, killed him.
Wow.
After he died, it was discovered what had happened, and he had already been losing his it was a deck of cards. He had, not deck of cards, house of cards, house of mirrors. He kept leveraging loans upon loans to buy land. So he'd get a loan to buy this land, and then get another loan to buy, you know, against that to buy another set of property. So, well, as soon as the money, you know, started struggling, he ended up losing almost everything. And this was the last piece of property he owned. When he died, the murder conspiracy was discovered. And the son ended up going to prison, and he was so upset, he ended up cursing that property. He and not just him, there were some others involved. And I don't want to drag down any native tribe. I'm not going to name a tribe.
Sure.
But they did absolutely perform a curse. Now, additionally, come to find out, this client, the woman who's being affected, is suffering from multiple sclerosis, and she's actually seeking, she's getting a treatment that's an alternative treatment. I mean, she's getting traditional treatment plus an alternative treatment from a doctor who is tricking her body into thinking her body's pregnant. The hormones apparently that are generated during a pregnancy is good to manage multiple sclerosis.
Okay.
That's the easiest way I can explain it. And I couldn't explain any further.
Sure.
The doctor ended up, during the duration of my investigation, the doctor ends up committing suicide by jumping off a skyscraper downtown. He was being investigated as a crack. So there's extenuating circumstances, but her treatments ended up stopping, right?
Yeah.
So I'm needing, I know I'm convinced that there is absolutely a demonic activity here. I do think that it was a curse that was opened up the opportunity for the demon to come. I do think that it's this demon that affected my wife that got me into this to begin with. And I'm gearing up to, and I think that it's more powerful than what I'm going to be able to deal with. I do think that there's a pulse of possession. One of the things that this client describes in the presence of this demon is her body and bones shake as if you're in the at a concert where they're doing a bass drum.
Sure.
Is being kicked, or, yep, you know, bass guitar at the lowest string. This, yeah, the vibrations just go through her, ultra low frequencies to just vibrate her. She can almost hear it, but it's a feeling. When I'm setting up to conduct what, you know, I call a discernment, she's talking to one of my investigators, and they're both older ladies, and they're just, I jokingly call it henpecking, but you know, they're just talking. And then you hear in a soft woman's voice, a third voice come over the top. And there's only three of us in the room. A third voice comes in over the top, says, "Erigus demonis." So what that is Latin for bear demons.
Okay.
And then following that, and I can actually send you this soundbite. Following that is a very low rumble, and it's just a sound. So that's the demon introducing itself to me. And, you know, of course, I didn't hear it at the time. I heard it at a later time. There was something else that happened. I forget what it was that made me go back and listen to that audio. Yeah, I have audio running at all times.
Sure.
We did catch additional pictures. We did catch what I believe is a different shadow entity moving across the room. During that night, actually, they owned, one of the sisters owned a trailer home that they rented. The elderly couple both died there, and we actually stayed in that mobile home. It was empty at the time, and that thing was so full of paranormal activity. I was when we had gone through our discernment and went to bed, I was laying there in my on my air mattress. Something was poking me on the forehead all night, kept waking me up. I went ahead and rolled cameras there because they said that they thought it might be haunted, and doors are opening and closing, cabinet doors opening and closing. You hear disembodied voices, you know, one of them, "Help me," stereotypical. So I ended up performing a simple exorcism on that place, as well as funeral rites, to try to help move people around. Now, at this time, I conclude, and I have my evidence, I am reaching back through, and I'm working for the Sacred Order of St. Michael, Order of Exorcists, with Archbishop File as the chief exorcist out in Brea, California. I reach out to him with the evidence, and he's in agreement that a full exorcism needs to take place. So we start talking to a young bishop out of Atlanta, Georgia. At the same time, I get contacted by the History Channel, who wants to come follow me. They had a TV show that was being piloted, and it was, but I guess I can share it. It's Jimmy Church, I'm sure you've heard of him, was the talent of the TV show. And they wanted to call it The Unexplained, ended up calling it Breaking Mysterious. It did air on the History Channel all over. Had a really neat time. But the thing of it is the whole premise of the story was things that you wouldn't normally know. People know about the priests and the bishops who perform exorcists, but they don't know the people who do the back work. So they wanted to come follow me, and they wanted to coalesce on an exorcism. And we were going to use this case for that TV show. Mm-hmm. Well, the person said okay, but then they started getting cold feet. The client got cold feet. And this is typical. You know, oftentimes leading up to an exorcism, a client will get cold feet.
Yeah.
So there was a lot. anytime you're dealing with a church, there's a lot of politics, and it doesn't matter what what religion. It doesn't. There's always politics.
Sure.
So it got to a point where I just told the TV show, you know, go do. You know, they got people down there you can do the show on. They said no, they wanted to do it with me. So they came to Wichita, Kansas, and followed me around for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. That bishop was so pissed off. He wrote me a 7-page slam letter, handwritten and front and back, and just slamming me. So I reached out to the Archbishop. Archbishop didn't want to have anything to do with it. So I ended up, that's how I ended up going finding Archbishop File. Archbishop Cloud. Long story short, I ended up performing the exorcism myself down there on that place. And it was dry, absolutely dry. There is no activity. There is no emotions. There is nothing happening. And to this day, that house has not had any type of supernatural activity. So what happened? Well, I'm convinced that because she was no longer receiving that treatment, tricking her body to think that it was pregnant, that demon just moved on. That is gone. There's nothing there for it to take. There's no life force for it to take.
Sure.
So that was probably, back to all the strings that connect everything. Now I have other, you know, I had a case that was connected to Zach Baggins. He doesn't know it. I'm not talking to him about it by any means. But, you know, there's always these little lines, these little tethers of how things can be put together. And that case was just, you know, for it to go back to literally started in 1890 when the first possession of that property was deeded. Mm-hmm. It was really, really interesting to go through that.
That wraps up the second part of our conversation with Timothy Earl. There is more, an exclusive part 3 for Gravekeepers. Those are supporters of our show. We're going to ask how on board are psychologists that Timothy has worked with the idea that someone is possessed. Is an exorcism always something that's demonic? Can you exorcise something that was once a human spirit? And we'll go into greater detail and learn more about the experiences that Tim and his wife had confronting something demonic that followed them home. That and much more in part 3. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper, sign up on our website at thegravetalks.com, or you can go directly through Apple Podcasts and get it for 3 days free, commercial-free access to all of our episodes, this entire interview, part 1, 2, and 3, and everything else we've ever made, including advanced episodes. That's what supports the program and keeps us on the air. Check it out on Apple Podcasts. Even try it for 3 days free or through patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for your support.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.